It's the truth about markets. My name is Max. I'm here with Stacey. We break it on down for you so that you two can make sense of what's going on in the world, because we believe that all you need to read to understand what's going on in the world is the Financial Times. That is the key to understanding who's doing what to whom and why. Now, we have some interesting market-related stories coming up, Stacey, but let's first touch upon something. Charles Clark, major climb down.
What happened?
Well, you know, he's climbing down from his whole program of incriminating anyone who has talked about what he calls a terrorist act for the past 20 years. You read about this?
Yeah.
And he's now toning down the language.
Yes, because apparently it would have turned out that you weren't allowed to glorify Nelson Mandela.
Yeah, exactly. And the subtleties in the language are basically the threshold now to prove speech that inflames so-called terrorism is beyond really the reach of Charles Clark. He's shot himself in the foot, basically.
He says this while he's in America. Mm-hmm. So is it his American masters? I mean, who's writing your laws here?
Well, yeah, exactly. He's in America getting the heads up from Washington about which way America wants UK to go when the UK is considering new laws to put on the law books, because as we all know, Tony Blair would never have illegally invaded Iraq had he not gotten the green light from the Bush White House to give the green light to Whitehall to go in there to Iraq illegally and start blowing people up.
We're going to talk about that a bit later in relation to God.
Yes, in relation to God. Now, let's talk about this for a second. Also, to follow up on things we've been talking about on this show, Ian Blair, head of the Metro Police here in the UK, has the shoot to kill or summary execution order. A lot of people are outraged in the UK then. Why would you give the police chief and his cops the right to perform summary execution on a whim? It seems like state punishment, capital punishment in a country that doesn't have capital punishment as part of its legal landscape. Well, the UK, I have this to say to you. If you think that's bad, you know, and since everything in America eventually ends up in the UK in 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, well, the timeline is getting shorter and shorter.
So if you in the UK think that having your cops perform executions on the spot on a whim, then you should be prepare yourself for what's happening in America. You've got talk show hosts like Bill O'Reilly calling for the execution of heads of foreign governments.
Bill O'Reilly.
He runs a show called The O'Reilly Factor, which is he's got an audience of brown shirts in America, and every day he gets on there and rallies the troops to go out there and kick the stuffing out of anybody who's not white and works for one of these corporations that's engaged in consumer suicide.
His show is on Fox News, which is owned by Murdoch. Murdoch's plan in America, you know, he uses, Americans are more violent, so they like violent television. Here, apparently, British men are quelled with just boobies.
Yeah, British men like the boobies, and in America, the men, you know, like violence. This is why I believe it was Stanley Kubrick who said that you can show a woman's breast getting sliced off in America, but you can't show a woman's breast. Because in America, they love violence and they have contempt for humanity. Pretty much, that's the way the economy is set up. And you've got Bush now. He goes on the speech this past week. I don't know if you caught it here in the UK, but he was addressing the subject of his war on terror. And basically, again, it's just an address to the brown shirts. His rationale for his so-called war on terror, it does not exist. He's trying to fight a network with his hierarchical pyramid approach, top-down management approach, which, of course, can never have any impact on a network-based opposing force. So it's going to be chasing good money after bad. It's a $200 billion boondoggle, soon to become a trillion-dollar boondoggle by some conservative estimates. Conservatives in Washington believe that this Iraq catastrophe will end up costing the U.S. $1 trillion. And, of course, that's all borrowed money. Mm-hmm. The U.S. can't pay its debt as it is. There is a very hardcore set of data that suggests that the interest on America's debt is now beyond the reach of the American economy to pay. Therefore, America is going into technical insolvency, no matter what they do at this point to get them out, which will mean that they will try to get themselves out of this problem by printing more money, which is only going to stoke inflation, raise interest rates, put further pressure on the housing market in America, around the world, and cause even more problems for that economy. And at a time when militarily they've stretched to the breaking point, the number of people who are signed up to go into the military now, they fail to meet their quota by something like 80,000 names. They're going to have to possibly bring back the draft in America. I'd like to see all these white punk Republican kids in America who support Bush, how they feel about being drafted into the war. I'd like to see if they still support the war at that point.
I'm sure they'll abandon it. Right now, they're just lowering the standards, apparently, like really low. You could be severely overweight. You can have heart problems. You could have brain damage. They're basically taking anybody at this point.
Speaking of overweight people, did you see that story in America that there was this, I guess it was a ferry, and they had a weight limit in terms of how many people they can have on board, and the ferry tipped over, and they did a little research, and they found out that the average weight that the Coast Guard uses to determine how many people should be on a ferry needs to be revised because the average American is such a god-awful fat...
Well, this comes on top of research this week that show that 90% of American men over the age of 65 are overweight or obese. 90%.
Yeah. Well, there's not much sex going on there, I don't think.
That's like a bad ad for Viagra, I have to say.
They need industrial Viagra to get all that flab up.
Ugh. Imagine, why would anybody want that product with a land of obese fat people?
Well, I mean, this just to touch back on what we started with, you know, in this country, people are upset about Ian Blair having execution powers to shoot people dead on the street on a whim. And we said, well, if you think that's bad, of course, Bill O'Reilly, who's a Fox talk show host in America, is calling for the assassination of the head of Syria. If the head of Syria doesn't do what Bill O'Reilly wants him to do. And don't forget, it was only a couple of weeks ago that Pat Robertson, who is one of the founders of America's religious fundamentalist cult, got on TV and said that Chavez, who's the democratically elected head of Venezuela, should be assassinated. So talk show hosts are doing the job of the Metro Police in America. So soon, who are the big talk show hosts? Do they have talk show hosts here in the UK?
No.
Johnny Vaughan is going to get on to radio and say that he thinks that the head of state for Pepe Pepe Island should be gunned down in the street because he doesn't like the way the Hawaiian shirt he's wearing.
Jonathan Ross, he's probably the most famous talk show host here, Michael Parkinson.
Is Jonathan Ross going to get on the TV and start calling for the assassination of various heads of state?
He won't even let Gerard Depardieu do smoke on set.
But can you imagine that? Jeremy Paxman? Maybe Jeremy Paxman would do that on Newsnight. He'd say, you know what, I've had enough of this nonsense. I'm calling for the assassination of various heads of state in the U.S. and in the U.K. Jeremy Paxman, get like Bill O'Reilly at Fox, man. Boost your ratings and call on the assassination of various heads of states. I don't know why Paxman hasn't gotten into that.
This could explain, however, Charles Clark is in America, why he's climbed down. Because he probably went, holy cow, Blair, have you seen the television here? We'd have to turn away every American citizen.
Pretty much.
They're glorifying assassination. They're glorifying suicide consumption. This is their television. This is their radio.
That's right. According to glorification of violence, no American would be allowed in the UK. And therefore, no American tourist dollars.
Exactly.
And the UK economy would suffer gravely on top of the suffering it's already experiencing due to the collapse in the housing market, due to the predatory loans made by bankers who fail to take into true costs accounting the nature of what they're doing by pushing loans like drugs on these poor, unsuspecting people in the UK, causing all kinds of problems.
But there you go. You know, once again, obese Americans have saved your lives. Well, your freedom of speech, at least.
Yeah, obese Americans, if it wasn't for obese Americans, the freedom of speech clamp would be in Charles Clark, craw, to punish you, maw. Oh, speaking of rap, so I'm getting into this whole rap thing. Remember on this show a couple of weeks ago?
Couple months ago.
Oh, yeah, I broke that rap song trying to get McDonald's to pay me because they said they give $5 every time they run an ad with a rap song that uses the word Big Mac, and I came up with that song like, yo, don't touch my bitch because I'll hit you with my Big Mac 10. I like food. Get out of here, y'all. You know, it wasn't a very good song.
And you're a Big Mac daddy pimp.
I'm a Big Mac daddy pimp, and this is my hoe, and I eat Big Mac, and so should you. But, you know, I wrote the song and I put it out on the radio and McDonald's hasn't sent me a nickel. Well, apparently nobody in the rap world bothered to create even one song on behalf of McDonald's to get any of that McDonald's rap money. That's what I just read.
Yeah, but I still say it's unfair that you did get it out over the airwaves and they owe you money.
They owe me at least $10, I think, from McDonald's, and they refuse to pay me the money they owe me for putting my rap song on the air. I use the word Big Mac in a rap song, therefore you owe me $5 every time that song was played. It was played once on our show, twice, three times. You owe me at least $35.
So if you want to join our petition, go to McDonald'sYouOweMaxKaiser5Bucks.com.
Yeah.
And sign our petition.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we had a great success on this show a couple of weeks ago. What was the name of that health club?
David Lloyd Gyms.
David Lloyd Gyms. We're happy to report that because of our campaign on this show, and which was inspired by the campaign of our friend Bevy Bev, the David Lloyd Gyms has made good on the customer service that they promised. And our friend Bevy Bev is now walking away from the matter.
He's extricated himself from their contract.
Thanks to the good work of the people here at the Truth About Market show in residence, 104.4 FM. And we've got other campaigns stewing and brewing all over the world now, because the politics in the world is swinging back away from the right extremism that you find in the UK and the US. And it's going back to a time now, I believe. For example, you see evidence of this in America. George Clooney is going to do a live TV version of that 1970-something cult classic movie, Network.
Mm-hmm.
You remember Network, which was a fantastic movie with Faye Dunaway and William Holden. And,
many of our audience wasn't born at that point, but well, if you should rent it, even download it from eDonkey or whatever. But oh, no, we wouldn't advocate that, would we? We're not famous musicians.
Yeah, it resonates for you all. It resonates, the movie Network. And they're redoing it on TV, a live version. And this is part of the resurgence of a political landscape that is going to be resistant of the warmongers and the profiteers. So when we started this show, of course, the politics was still very much in the right wing camp. And now that it's swinging to the left wing, the people in the right wing camp are getting very desperate. They're lashing out at each other. They're lashing out in any way that they can. They're making less and less sense, if they ever made sense to begin with. The White House in America is embroiled in multiple scandals. It's looking much worse than Watergate for the Republicans in the White House. They've got Karl Rove. He's looking like he's in trouble. This guy Frist, who made the diagnosis on TV of Terri Schiavo that she was not in a vegetative state, that she was responding to stimuli, and that she needed to be rushed down to the polling station and vote in some way. He's been proven, he allegedly is engaged now in insider trading.
Tom DeLay,
the exterminator that became a big Republican wheel. He's facing all kinds of problems.
Fraud, money laundering.
Yeah, fraud and money laundering. So,
He's probably welcome in London, because London is the home of many fraudsters and money launderers.
Yeah, they have the capital of that whole.
He could get a job in the city.
Oh, in a heartbeat. He'd be running some big fund for one of the big banks down there right away, doing various arbitrage schemes. You know, the value of killing people around the world who aren't white versus the value of buying stock in companies that promote whiter than white. It's the racial arbitrage net profit schemes that you see all over the world, in particular in the U.S. and the U.K.
But they also, in the White House, in Dick Cheney's office, they found a spy
really?
Who was, like, taking government secrets and sending them to the Philippines to support the opposition there. So they apparently this is the highest level spy ever in America. And also this week, another spy from Douglas Feith's office, the Undersecretary of State, he pleaded guilty to spying for Israel. So this guy was providing them with secret information about Iran,
mm-hmm.
and he was trying to lobby the U.S. government to invade Iran.
Wow.
So the White House, this looks pretty exciting. I mean, it's kind of white-knuckle ride here.
Yeah, they're in for a rude awakening over there. The economy is really coming apart. Alan Greenspan, who's been there in the Fed chairmanship for 20 years, he's retiring in a few months. And interest rates are going up. Inflation is rearing its ugly head. And things are looking bad. I thought that, what's that?
Before we go off George the Bush administration, can I ask you? Now, apparently it turns out that George Bush told the Palestinians that God had told him to invade Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And according to the stories out, he was also told by God to run for president because that the U.S. government, the U.S. state would be under threat from foreign terrorists. This is what he claims.
Mm.
But remember that movie Whistle Down the Wind?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that
what was, what's his name? Richard Attenborough. Sir Richard Attenborough.
Sir Richard Attenborough. Remember those little kids found a murderer in their barn, but they thought it was Jesus Christ.
Right.
So they were doing everything to help this murderer escape the authorities who were looking for him.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end...
Haley Mills, I think, was in that. Haley Mills.
And Alan Bates.
Right.
Alan Bates played the murderer.
Ah, yes.
But maybe it's not God, and maybe it's Satan talking to...
to George Bush.
To George Bush.
He's being advised by Satan.
But and another thing, I mean, where is the press here in the UK? Remember, now, if you were, I don't think you were here, but on the eve of the invasion into Iraq, you were. We
on
were
the shock and awe?
Yeah.
You and I were at Hazlitt's.
No, but when Tony Blair was making his statement to the House of Commons, he had a maniacal look in his eye, and he said, "Trust me, I know something you don't. You know, all that evidence about weapons of mass destruction, yes, it's a bit shoddy. All the, all the Saddam Hussein being a mass murderer, yes, okay, the evidence is shoddy, but I have information you don't." And is it, was that information, was this some sort of conversation with God?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think we should know whether he's hearing voices.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys crazy? What's going on?
Yeah, he did say that, didn't he?
He said there was something he knows that you don't.
And that was never explored since then.
No, and it turns out it was a conversation that George Bush allegedly had with God. Of course, there's no evidence.
So the
transcripts of that conversation were there.
The British troops that are dead as a result of George Bush having a conversation with God and then relaying that conversation to Blair, who he told the British people were the thing that he couldn't tell them was driving him to go into Iraq, is the reason they're dead.
Yes. That's exactly what I was trying to say.
My God. So those people, I would imagine, should be quite upset about this because they're being toyed with by guys who are on drugs. I mean, Bush is on drugs. Let's be frank about it. Let's break this to the UK audience. They might not be aware of this. And in the U.S., you can't say this in the U.S. You'll never get a voice for this in the U.S. No one is talking about this in the U.S. Let's talk to our U.K. audience about something that they probably maybe are not aware of, that they should know, that we can talk to them, because the standards for free speech in here in this country are different than in the U.S., and when it comes to political speech, we're free to say stuff that we can't say in the U.S. So let's say the truth.
You could say it in the States, but nobody will air it. It's because everything is owned by Fox. But
let's talk about this. Bush is on drugs.
Xanax. If you look up Google Xanax, X-A-N-A-X, and just see what it does to you.
Yeah.
It's for nerves. It's for people who are anxious.
Yeah.
He's not competent for the job, that he's nervous about the whole thing, and he's not able to handle it.
Well, speaking of competence, did you see this column by George Will in the Washington Post, and he's a very respected conservative analyst who wrote a column saying that, in its reference to this recent nomination to the Supreme Court in the U.S., it indicates that Bush is completely incompetent and has clearly no understanding even of what the job that he's supposed to be doing is about.
Mm.
It goes beyond just making a bad decision. George Will is saying that the recent choice for the Supreme Court indicates that Bush is completely incapable of even the most rudimentary understanding of the dimension of his job beyond kind of the cheerleading aspect of it. Remember, he was a cheerleader in college.
Yes.
His dad was a famous athlete, and Bush was a cheerleader.
Uh-huh.
So he gets to the White House, and he's a cheerleader.
Mm-hmm.
He'll say, "Oh, I love this guy and that guy. We're going to win. We're going to smoke him out. You know, America's great.
Go Halliburton.
Go Halliburton. We love Halliburton." But he has no understanding of any of the subtleties that make up the economy of the U.S. or the politics of the U.S. And as a result of the pressures that come when you put someone like this, a buffoon, in a very high-pressure job, his intake of Xanax apparently is just skyrocketing.
Yes. And there were actually quite a few comments even during the 2004 presidential elections, because there were times when he seemed to be zonked on drugs live on television on these debates.
Mm-hmm.
Because clearly it would make sense if he were taking Xanax and he was nervous that he... When you take Xanax, and I have taken it for flights because I get nervous flying, and it knocks you out for days. It's a very powerful sedative.
Yeah, what's unbelievable is that in America, if you're in politics and you are incapable of articulating a coherent sentence, this is perceived as being in some way genuine.
Well, actually, now that you mentioned that coherent sentences... It makes you very incoherent. It's hard to string together a sentence when you're on Xanax.
Yeah, but in American politics, this is perceived as genuine, a genuine quality. You know, the backwoodsman who comes from nowhere to lead the country. You know, Mr. Smith goes to Washington, this type of thing. So when you have people up there who are plain spoken or even incoherent, the perception amongst the electorate is that he must be telling the truth, because no one can be that stupid. His basic understanding of the reality of the situation is so basic that he sounds stupid, and we like that.
Yeah.
And of course, in the UK, it's complete opposite. The power of oratory has a lot to do with the rise of political stars. Tony Blair, for all of his shortcomings, is a powerful debater in Question Time on Wednesdays, and he's a powerful speechmaker and orator. You can't take that away from him. You know, so much so that Bush has outsourced a lot of the speeches during the Iraq invasion to Blair. You know, that's a case of outsourcing right there. Bush's speeches were outsourced to Tony Blair, who went on to make very eloquent speeches about why there is a need to go in there and try to make some more money for the Halliburtons and the Exxons of the world and kill some non-whites, because we know that there'll never be any accounting for it. But ultimately, there is one major arbiter of truth when it comes to this type of lopsided accounting, and that's the ecology. And again, this week, major headlines that the ecology, due to man-made industrial stupidity, is rapidly deteriorating. You know, people say, why do you do this show, The Truth About Markets? Is it because you think these politicians stink and you're trying to get them out of office? Not really. What we're trying to do is raise people's awareness to the point where they get active in their activist campaigns and their boycotts of certain products, to the point where the cash these companies need to thrive on is cut. The cash flow is cut, and therefore the lifeblood to the companies are cut, and that these companies effectively can no longer be in business and no longer degrade the environment. And we've got several companies on our list that we feel are quite vulnerable to a boycott, Coca-Cola being the number one vulnerable company to a boycott. This was picked up, actually, this past week. We talked about it on this show last week. There's a new mutual fund in America that feels so threatened by this concept of bringing intelligent market logic to activism that they've started a counter-mutual fund to do the opposite of anything we're doing in our fund. And the reaction has shown that this type of approach has really touched a raw nerve. And
yes.
I think that's different than a lot of the other activist campaigns that you hear about and see about. They tend to be marginalized as lunacy, left lunacy, the loony left, fringe, liberal. You know, they get pushed into some camp of marginalization. Mm-hmm. But this campaign that we talk about at Karma Bank has really touched a raw nerve, and it goes right to the heart of the matter, which is you have to really get into the economics of how these problems arise. The capitalist model, the neoliberal model, the Anglo-Saxon model, the post Adam Smith model of economics is a model that does not place adequate cost on environmental damage. And now, after 200 years of this model, we're seeing the results. The environment is crashing. So we have examples of the environment crashing this past week. It's getting more and more hellacious as the weeks go by.
Well, the example of this week is that the World Bank, remember, run now by the arch neoconservative Paul Wolfowitz, has come out with a study which shows that millions, they say, are dying every year from climate change and pollution.
Okay. And what more evidence do you need? The economy doesn't work. Millions of people are dying from climate change and pollution. So when Gordon Brown or Tony Blair or George Bush get on TV and they say, we're pursuing a high-growth economy, and we believe that continental Europe should be ashamed of their quote-unquote low-growth economy, what they're saying is that the rate at which the U.S. and the U.K. is destroying the habitat that supports human life is faster than the European version, and that this should be applauded.
Yeah.
Now, isn't that the very definition of sadism? Isn't that sadism? Is it suicide consumption? You bet it is. It's encouraging people to eat themselves, to pollute themselves, to degrade their environment to themselves to the point where they cause their own extinction. That's what economic growth or GDP growth telegraphs. That's what that number signifies.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the growth in the UK recently has come down because there's so much debt in the system like there is in the US. So a lot of the money that this economy is throwing off is going to paying debt. So it's not really creating anything new. It's just going to debt service. As a result, the so-called growth rate has come down. People are saying, oh my God, that's bad. Well, no. Oh my God, that's good. If you're talking about the long term, beyond the next 5 years, if you plan on living for more than 5 years, you would want the UK economy to be at under 1%. You would want the US economy growth to be under 1%. You would want China and Brazil economy to be under 1%. If you have an economy like China and Brazil growing 8, 9, 10, 11%, and they've got a billion people, 2 billion people, and they're mimicking the neoliberal model, the post-Adam Smith model, the amount of waste that goes into the system, the toxicity, the pollution, the climate change problems, that the very World Bank is saying is killing millions of people, that number then goes up.
I mean, and you have to remember, the World Bank is responsible for underwriting many of these programs that create this death. So their own studies are showing that these policies of uber growth and high GDP growth and focusing only on one number, which is GDP growth, it's killing people.
It is killing people. The economy is killing people. And the reason why this is not focused on is because the corporations who benefit in the short term don't want this discussion to take place in these terms. And therefore, you see an incredible exaggeration of the so-called terrorist threat as a diversionary tactic.
Mm-hmm.
Because think about what's happened in the last few years, from 9/11 to the recent bus bombings in New York to the Madrid bombings. As horrific as those events were, when you stack up the carnage against what the corporations are doing, what the Coca-Colas of the world are doing, what the Dow Chemicals of the world are doing, Microsoft, Monsanto, and the whole list of companies we track at Karma Bank, when you add up the carnage of those companies, it's a much worse picture. It's almost Stalin-esque in the damage that the FTSE 100 companies and the S&P 500 companies are doing. It's an enormous problem. It's challenging the very survival of the human species. When you get back to the criminals, the low-lying criminals who do the high-profile bombings, It's something that the media can pick up. And by the way, they're owned by the same corporations. We talked about this with the movie Network at the beginning of the show. They're bringing this movie back, Network, because I think it was 1973 when it came out, it was at that time considered to be a satire of the way the world works with the control of the media by the corporate interests. Since 1973, we've seen that prophecy come true. Paddy Chayefsky has been proven now to be a prophet of our times, and that the corporate interest takeover of the media and government has created a situation where, just like in Network, there's growth in ratings by killing people, killing the anchorman. The ratings grow because they kill the anchorman, Howard Beale. Now, in the case of Coca-Cola, Monsanto, Microsoft, and these other corporations, Tesco, their earnings grow by killing their consumers. Their consumers die a slower death than Howard Beale faced when he was assassinated live on the air. But these consumers, whether it's consumers of Coke's products, and we talked about this last week, they've got a new study out for aspartame as it relates to Diet Coke. Apparently, allegedly, this is confirming what a lot of people have suspected, that allegedly it causes cancer.
Not even allegedly. According to the Italian studies, it does cause kidney cancer and brain cancer.
Okay, so how is that different than a network? Kill the anchorman, boost ratings. Coca-Cola's model, kill the consumer, boost profits. The tobacco company is no stranger to this model. They've been doing this for decades, kill the consumer, boost profits. Exxon? Well, they're the biggest carbon abuser in the world. They're killing their consumers, killing their customers to boost profits. Monsanto with genetically modified seeds. Are genetically modified seeds safe to consume? Maybe, maybe not. But more importantly, do you want genetically modified seeds, which gives Monsanto the ability to monopolize the seed industry, to create another pernicious monopoly in the global economy that affects food? Do you want that in the global economy? No, because monopolies create wealth and income gaps. We already have millions and hundreds of millions and billions of people on the poverty line, starving to death, famine, ravaged populations all over the world. So do you want to give Monsanto the ability to make that worse by giving them monopoly power over crop seeds? Of course you don't. And this is the problem we have with Bob Geldof. We've talked, to make a segue into a Bob Geldof thing, because Bob Geldof apparently is up for a Nobel Prize. We had him on our show. We asked him point blank, why would you trust these companies to act any better in Africa than they do in their home countries? And he said, well, you have a point, Max. But we have no other choice. But,
we just have to cross our fingers and pray and hope.
Yeah, his attitude is like Tony Blair, who says, globalization is here, get over it. Now, Tony Blair takes the position most familiar, most analog to the rapist, who says, I'm going to rape you anyway. Enjoy it. This is what Tony Blair tells his constituents. Our government, in bed with the corporate elite, are raping you. You need to get over it and enjoy it. That's what Tony Blair's message is. This is what George Bush's message is. This is what Charles Clark's message is. Enjoy getting raped.
And then blame the victim, of course.
Yeah, we'll put it on reality TV, and we'll give you maybe a chance to get famous as a rape victim. Now, tell me the stars of reality TV are not famous rape victims. These are just media rape that goes on. They take people who have no ability to deal with the pressure cooker situation. They stick them in a fishbowl with some drugs and some naked bodies. They abuse each other psychologically for the sadistic pleasure of the home audience, who is basically complicit in the rape of these people. Psychological rape. Monsanto is genetically raping the crops, food crop industry of the world. Microsoft is intellectually raping cyberspace with horrible digital rights management technology that they're trying to get through to make every piece of software and hardware tied into a monopolist / rapist. Exxon, the problems are obvious. Coca-Cola, it's a company that in India is siphoning water, groundwater, causing crop failure. This is proven.
This is
not a debate. This is what they're doing.
Yes, I guess the Indian Supreme Court did say that, didn't they?
That's correct.
And that there were pesticides, higher levels of pesticides in the Coca-Cola they sold in India than in Europe.
And in India, they want Coke to list on the ingredients of every Coke sold the pesticides in the Coke. Because in India, it's cheaper to use Coke as a pesticide than to buy the pesticides from Monsanto. So does that mean that Coke should buy Monsanto, or Monsanto should buy Coke, so they could be a